Hi, I'm Dr. Maish Seibel, and you can find more at drmaish.com, drmache.com. Today, our discussion is on the topic of painful sex and vaginal pain, a very common topic that affects millions of women, but something that doesn't get much discussion because either women are embarrassed to talk about it with their healthcare providers, or what is often the case, many times doctors don't ask. So we know that only about 7% of women are actually getting treated for this problem. And that doesn't have to be the way it is. I have a discussion that we're going to begin in just a moment with Dr. Murray Friedman. He's one of the country's authorities on this topic. But at the end of this discussion, which took place not that long ago, there is going to be something I want to add on for you, and that's some updates that have taken place since the original interview that I did that I think is going to be very helpful. There's some new techniques, some new methodology, things that you can put to use immediately. So let's go on with our interview, and then afterwards, there'll be some additional points, information, and techniques that you need to know about. So check those out as well. So I have the distinct pleasure of joining me today, Dr. Murray Friedman. Dr. Friedman is a clinical professor at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta, Georgia, and really an authority on this topic. I've heard him speak on this. He is fantastic about it and got a lot of information that I think will be very, very useful to people to understand more about what they can do to improve this aspect of their life. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Listen, it's my pleasure, Maish, and I just appreciate people that are interested in women's health. And as you know and mentioned, I've had a long-term interest in what I consider a real triad in women's quality of life, and that is the correlation between sex, hormones, and happiness. And as you and I mentioned when we've discussed this before, I think that people need to realize that there really is this connection in sexuality and happiness and how people relate to significant others in their lives. And from a sexuality standpoint, genital atrophy plays a major role in the decline in human sexuality as we age.
Tell me a little bit about what is genital atrophy. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it's interesting because there's certainly medically physicians understand atrophy, that is aging changes where things involute, and unfortunately maybe the lay public doesn't understand the term involute, but as we age, just like skin begins to age and it undergoes what we call atrophy, it ages. There's just certain aging changes that we see.
So the vagina will thin and it will become pale and it doesn't have as many folds in it and less moist than it was, things like that.
Absolutely. And probably equally important is the fact that it loses its elasticity. Mm-hmm. In other words, as this atrophic process ensues, the vagina, with the lack of female hormone estrogen, which is concurrent with menopause, this shrinkage causes discomfort with intercourse because the tissue is inelastic. I mean, literally, the opening begins to close up. I mean, it shrinks. So
it narrows down.
Absolutely.
You know, when I talk about this with patients, what I do, and I see if this works for you, is you know how when you have that ribbing at the top of your sock and you go to put your foot in and so the sock spreads open so you can slip your foot in and it's got those little folds in it and that stretch. And then I always try to explain atrophy is kind of like as if those folds in the top of your gym socks went away and you just had this tight band at the top, and that's what it's kind of like that happening. Would you say that's kind of the way it is?
I think that's a great analogy, and one of the points that you make that's frequently overlooked medically sometimes is not only, as you mentioned, do we lose the folds in the sock, which will allow it to expand, but the very top of the sock to get your foot in is where the shrinkage occurs early on, so that you can't even get your foot into the sock to get to the part that's still elastic. In other words, the opening shrinks inordinately more rapidly than does the vagina itself.
So the outer third, if you will, of the vagina, and I think it's because, as you have said, that it comes from a different embryological origin, is a little bit more susceptible, more likely, and more affected by the lack of estrogen, and so it narrows disproportionately even more. So the opening, the entrance to the vagina, is really smaller.
Absolutely, and you make a great point in that the entrance is where the narrowing occurs earliest. So that, and there's a little bit of a misconception medically in that, oh yes, all we have to do when this occurs is use a lubricant. And that's true because it does allow penetration. But at the same time, the atrophic process continues so that, yes, initially the lubricant helps with penetration during intercourse. But the atrophic process continues and over time will become so narrow that even a lubricant will cause, you know, will not fix the problem, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So now, I'm sorry. What I was going to ask you was that, you know, what we're talking about is a process that's age-related. So as women get older, the process is going to continue. But when does this start?
It really is directly related to estrogen levels. As long as the woman's estrogen level is normal, and I'll use normal being enough to stimulate the lining of the uterus that menstrual periods typically occur, when they don't ovulate anymore and you don't see these fluctuation in hormone levels, many women still make enough hormone that it prevents the shrinkage from accelerating. So that even though she may be menopausal, she may still have enough estrogen that she lubricates well and that the atrophic process does not ensue. On the other hand, once the circulating level of estrogen drops to a certain level, then the atrophic process really accelerates.
So in the 40s, and the woman's in their 40s, and estrogen levels are starting to decline a little bit, but there's still a pretty good amount of them flowing in the bloodstream. This isn't that big of a problem.
Exactly. It's typically seen when the estrogen level really gets low. And clinically, a wonderful poor man's test to see what the estrogen level is, particularly locally in the vaginal area, is to do a vaginal pH. Because when the pH is normal, you don't see atrophy. I mean, there's an absolute direct correlation between the pH, and if it's normal, you just don't see the atrophic process. So that even in a woman who has good estrogen in the rest of the body, for instance, may show some shrinkage in the vaginal area. And the analogy here, the parallel here, would be in the male, because you can see in a male, you can see erectile dysfunction, even though they've got normal hormones in the blood, they may have a vascular problem in the pelvis, like a diabetic or a person with severe hypertension might have vascular problems, not be able to have an erection. The same thing can happen to a woman. If she's a diabetic and has vascular problems, she may not get a blood flow to the vagina. And in that particular patient, you can have an atrophic process begin with normal estrogen in the rest of the body. So that what they need is topical or local estrogen to prevent the atrophic process, even though her level of estrogen in the blood might be sufficient. Go ahead.
No, you're making a really good point, and that is that people who have certain conditions that affect the blood vessels in their body might be more likely to have this problem of vaginal atrophy, and that's going to cause pain with penetration.
Right. No, that's true. And in a younger woman, that can happen. And you think, oh, well, she might not have any hot flashes or anything else, but show signs of atrophy. And you could check the pH, and it would clearly be abnormal. And this is particularly evident in women that are heavy smokers, because it cuts down on the vascular supply to the pelvis. So that all you have to do is simply do a vaginal pH, which is a good surrogate marker for what the serum estrogen level is. And if it's low, then these people need, you know, additional topical estrogen to to prevent or treat the atrophic process.
Now, pH, just for clarification, most people will know, but pH is the level of acidity or alkalinity of anything. And in this case, the pH is measured by, how do you do a pH test?
Right. It's basically done with, and a pH test is what we're really using, and anybody that knows basic chemistry knows, we're basically using a litmus paper. And what the litmus paper does, and they make different types that turn colors depending on what the pH is. And the pH in the vagina is indicative, if it's normal, that there's what we would consider and would be a normal ecosystem in the vagina. And that just means the normal system of balance of healthy, normal bugs. And it'd be like the throat. You have a normal flora in the throat, and you have a normal flora in the vagina. And when you have that normal process, to simplify it, when it's normal and in proper balance, the pH is in an acidic range with this litmus paper. So it's very simply a paper test, very inexpensive, that gives you a good idea of whether you have a normal system in health with proper balance of the bacteria and all of the chemistry versus one that's would permit the atrophic process or indicate the atrophic process was ensuing.
So what happens then is the woman ages, or as the estrogen lowers for other reasons like smoking or high blood pressure or diabetes, then the pH, the level of, quote, acidity, starts to get more alkaline in the vagina, and that changes the amount of so-called good bacteria versus bacteria that can cause problems, and that leads to this, that begins to set up the situation of what they call atrophic vaginitis.
You're right, although one caution is that the majority of people who have what is referred to as atrophic vaginitis really don't have an inflammation of the vagina because of bacteria. In other words, it's always been referred to as atrophic vaginitis, but it's not an infectious process like most things that are associated with itis. In other words, if you have pharyngitis, you have an infection in a red throat. In the vagina, we have atrophic vaginitis, but it's really a misnomer because it's more an atrophic process than it is an infectious process.
So your partner is not going to catch it from you, so to speak.
Exactly. It's not so much a bacterial infection. And part of the redness is caused, as you mentioned, because the lining of the vagina thins so much that you literally see some of the blood vessels underlying, and it looks red. And it's not an inflammatory process like an infection, although it's thin and it is easily traumatized because it thins, but it's not particularly because of the bacteria or an infection, per se.
Now, one of the things that you point out when you lecture on this topic, which I think is just fascinating, is that the process leads to this narrowing of the opening of the vagina and shrinkage of the opening of the vagina. But and what happens as a consequence of that is it has an impact on the urinary tract, at least to the standpoint of the urethra, that little opening where the urine comes out, is affected by this shrinkage. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, that's not a not uncommon complication as women age and they get this atrophic process. The lining of the urethra thins out just like the lining of the vagina. And because it becomes thinned out and traumatized, you can get bacterial infections more frequently. So up to 10% of women over 70 have recurrent bladder infections, not so much because of the infection, but because of the decreased susceptible, or the more susceptible they are, decreased resistance of the normal tissues to bacteria. In other words, they're just more susceptible to get urinary tract infections because of this change in the pH and the ecosystem that was normally protective is somewhat lost when all of these tissues shrink.
Now, does the urethra kind of stick out a little bit more as the tissue around it begins to withdraw and shrink down?
It's an interesting question, Mason. I've looked at this for about 10 years now and photographically tried to follow what happens. And it's because it thins out, the lining thins out, and as it thins out, it allows the opening to the urethra to change its shape, and it really becomes more, what the medical term is, more patulous or open, so that I think ascending infection becomes more likely. In other words, again, it's a compromised host defense that allows this infectious process to be present in these older women.
So the opening to the urethra begins to kind of pout out, like if you put out your lip, so to speak, and pout, and it kind of opens it up a little bit, and then you have different kind of bacteria, and then so you get just more likely to get a bladder infection.
I think that's well said. You get what medically is referred to as an ectopy, the medical term is a caruncle, where you really begin to see the inner lining of the urethra becomes more prominent at the opening of the urethra. And I think this tissue is more susceptible to infection. And because the pH has changed, you have more virulent bacteria that then gain access to the bladder. So I think it's all a compromised host resistance that allows these infections to be more prevalent in the older population.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking with Dr. Murray Friedman, who's a clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta. And I'm Dr. Mae Seibel. And we're talking about one of the most common symptoms of menopause when women age, the most common symptoms 10 years after menopause, and that is atrophic vaginitis and some of the symptoms that it causes. So I wonder if you could talk about how women might present when they come in in terms of their sexual problems, or what are the things that if a woman would most likely come in and say to you, you know, Dr. Friedman, I've got, what's going on in her mind?
I guess one of the reasons I think our discussion today, Mace, is so interesting is the vast majority of women suffer in silence. I mean, this is not something you go to the bridge club and talk to your bridge partners and say, oh, yeah, do any of you have discomfort? You know, my husband and I, every time we have relations, I'm beginning to have some discomfort. Is this something that bothers other people? Most women have this and really don't know who to talk to, and they're really delighted when their healthcare provider broaches this topic and says, you know, in many women your age, assuming she's, for instance, 5 or 10 years postmenopausal, and say, in the vast majority of women your age, sex sometimes becomes a little uncomfortable. Has this been a problem for you? And most women, if they're not on a hormone and they're you know, 5 or 10 years into menopause, they're going to have some discomfort or dryness. And many of these people, as we mentioned earlier, use a lubricant, and the problem is handled reasonably well, but the atrophic process continues. And in most relationships, when there's some discomfort, her pleasures diminish, so we tend not to be as sexually active. The two things that really prevent or slow down this process is, one, hormones, as we mentioned, estrogen, but the other is sexual activity. Mm-hmm. So that it's a little bit of a use it or lose it phenomenon, in that any area of the body stays healthier, like muscles and joints, if we use them. And if we don't, the atrophic process ensues more rapidly. So in the absence of hormone coupled with less sexual activity, this whole atrophic process continues unabated or accelerates, so that it becomes more problematic.
So it's a negative cycle, really, is that you get a little discomfort, a little narrowing, and then you decide, well, maybe it's not so pleasurable. You hold off a little bit because it's not quite pleasant, but as a result of not use, it ends up accelerating the process. So it gets to be worse and worse. And actually, then what you're saying is that either treating it, or if it was possible when the beginning of this happened to continue being sexually active, might actually have a beneficial effect, even without treatment, if women could continue, if the discomfort were not so great that it was just unacceptable.
You're absolutely correct. And another interesting association, Mace, is in these women who have particularly women that have just not had children, and they've had more of a narrow vagina from day one, then they're more susceptible to this shrinkage. I mean, it's obvious if you start with a very small opening, it's only going to get smaller. So women that have had two or three children, this is not as prevalent a problem if they've had vaginal deliveries, because the vagina has been dilated a little bit with childbirth, and it's not as susceptible to the shrinkage. So that also is problematic, particularly the women that have had C-sections or not had children. You start with an opening to the vagina that's already small. It only gets smaller, so it's more of a problem early on. But like you mentioned, sexual activity or physical therapy, where we dilate the vagina using some topical estrogen, is very beneficial to prevent or treat the problem once it exists.
I just want to say that you mentioned physical therapy, and although we're not going to be talking about that in great detail now, I do want to mention that for some women who do have sexual pain, who have vaginal pain, who have generally pelvic discomfort, a lot of times a physical therapist will be able to actually do physical therapy on the muscles of that part of the body, be able to give exercises to a woman. There are a lot of things that you can do from the point of view of a physical therapist that could make a huge difference. So in addition, you might want to talk to your gynecologist about a referral to a physical therapist, or identify a physical therapist who does deal with pelvic pain, and that could be a tremendous help in some instances. I just want to make you aware of that in case that's something that applies to you. Now, because this starts, as you said a moment ago, about 5-6 years into menopause, since the average age of menopause in the United States, at least, is around age 51, so somewhere around the mid-50s would be mid to late 50s would be a time when women might start to notice that this was actually happening.
Absolutely correct. And interestingly, many women, and it's dependent on their estrogen production, many women might notice this much earlier if their estrogen level drops. For instance, a woman that had a hysterectomy, particularly if the ovaries were removed, would begin to notice this very early, within a year or so of the loss of estrogen. So it really is directly related to the amount of serum estrogen that a woman has as to how early it occurs. And we've looked at this, gosh, particularly in the last 10 years. Many women, even if the ovaries are left in place that have had a hysterectomy, the blood supply to the vaginal area is somewhat different after a hysterectomy. And some of these women, even though they still have ovaries and still have good estrogen circulating, they still have a deficiency locally, and they would benefit from topical therapy. So, again, the pH is a marvelous cheap way to assess the local estrogen, because if it's a normal pH, they've got good estrogen topically, locally, and there shouldn't be any problem with the atrophic process as such.
Now, what about the effect of atrophic vaginitis, or thinning and aging of the vaginal tissues? What is the effect of that on, say, the support of the bladder or of the rectum? Does not treating this have an effect on the organs that are right next to the vagina?
There really is very little good data that's looked at this. And the reason I say that is, in many women, because the tissues lose their elasticity, the support may still be pretty good. On the other hand, there's no question that when hormone levels are low and the aging process occurs, you can have prolapse or genital weakness as a result of the atrophic process. It's just poorly understood as to the direct correlation between support and estrogen. So I would love to have more information about it, but quite frankly, I think there's a real paucity of good information, good data about the effect of the hormone in relationship to pelvic support.
So some of this would be independent, individual things. It may also have an effect on how difficult a woman's labor was, and how traumatic, if you will, the childbearing was, because there could be damage to the tissues or some tearing of some of the support tissues, and this would cause it to be worse if there was already an underlying problem. Is that what you're saying?
I think you're absolutely right. I think there may be a physical support problem with childbearing, and that some of these structures are damaged but the correlation with the hormone level later in life, and that damage is just, it's lacking. We just don't have a lot of great information, I think, to state positively or negatively how this is impacted by the hormone level.
Now, if a woman's having, some discomfort, she notices that when her partner starts to enter the vagina that there's discomfort at that point in time. They use a lubricant and so forth and maybe getting by, but is there any other things that you go through your mind when you see this? Are there other kinds of problems that it could be other than just natural aging?
I think certainly there are many, many causes of discomfort with sex, and the majority of those are more prevalent in the younger woman than in the postmenopausal woman. I think the vast majority of discomfort in postmenopausal women, particularly if there were no discomfort prior to menopause, the discomfort after menopause is primarily related to the atrophic process itself. Most of the problems in younger women, things that cause painful intercourse, really relate more to deep penetration than superficial penetration. On the other hand, there are certain infectious processes or inflammatory processes like vestibulitis and viral illnesses that are much more prevalent in the younger patient. But I think the majority of new discomfort with sex in the menopausal woman is due to the hormonal insufficiency.
Now, the tissues that are just outside of the vagina, the labia, the lips of the vagina, and the vulva, that skin that goes around the vagina, that's also affected by estrogen, isn't it?
Very much so. It's identical to the tissue just inside the vagina. In fact, the external genitalia, you mentioned the lips of the vagina and the opening itself, as you said earlier, are of a different origin. And embryologically, they're more sensitive because of this origin than is the upper vagina. So the shrinkage in the upper vagina really occurs years later, whereas the opening shrinks very early. And that's why I said most of these people don't have trouble with penetration because they use a lubricant, but over time the atrophic process just compounds itself.
And some of this thinning of the skin outside, the vulva and the shrinkage that occurs in that tissue, can that lead to pain or itching or other things that the woman might notice?
There are a number of women who complain of discomfort at the opening, and this skin, as you mentioned, undergoes some atrophy. Again, there's not a really good documentation for the discomfort they have, but it definitely correlates to the atrophic process in that as these tissues thin out, they're more susceptible to trauma and irritation, and it's a real problem. You certainly see it much more prevalently in women that are estrogen deficient than in women who take hormone therapy and prevent the atrophic process.
Well, we've talked a lot about the build-up to this, the fact that the outer third of the vagina and the skin around it and the lips of the vagina are very, very sensitive to estrogen, that with aging and with the lack of estrogen primarily, that there's going to be this narrowing, and that's going to cause potentially difficulty with penetration and pain with penetration. And we talked about the fact that frequency of intercourse has an importance in terms of kind of delaying this from becoming a big problem. But I guess that takes us into the issue of treating, and you've been talking about estrogen. So if a woman were to come in with this kind of problem and you checked her pH, found the level of acidity was in the wrong level and it had become more alkaline, and now you were going to treat it, how would you go about it? What would you do?
You know, that too is a very interesting point, because if the only therapy that's necessary is the vaginal atrophy, then small amounts, and I mean just a fingertip or so of cream twice a week, is extremely effective therapy to prevent and or reverse the atrophic process at the opening of the vagina. So I think most healthcare providers are unaware that such a small amount of estrogen is so wonderfully therapeutic to both prevent and treat the atrophic process, particularly as it applies, as we mentioned, to the opening of the vagina, that is, the lips of the vagina and the opening itself. So
women would just take some you would prescribe her an estrogen cream. She might put just a dab of it, like you would the amount you'd put on your toothbrush if it was toothpaste, just a dab of it, something like that, and kind of rub it on the outer part of the lips of the vagina, just inside or on the skin around it. Tell me what you would tell the person.
You hit it precisely. A small amount of cream, just to really enough to wet or moisten the surface of the lips of the vagina as well as the opening. And the woman herself, assuming she's in reasonably good health, can literally feel this opening of the vagina. It's not unlike if she were to put in a tampon, and you literally feel the opening, and you can massage the topical cream into the opening such that it maintains its elasticity and should accommodate vaginal penetration during sex. So it's physical therapy. It's very easy. It's inexpensive. And a small amount of cream twice a week with physical therapy and dilating this opening to keep it open is very easy and takes only a minute or two twice a week.
So this is estrogen cream.
Yes.
Now we're not talking about like hand lotion anything. We're talking about estrogen cream. And I want to mention again that if the pain is not just on the outside, on penetration, on just on entering the vagina, where you need some kind of a topical estrogen to help you, you can get physical therapy in addition that can help pelvic pain by seeing a physical therapist. And they can oftentimes help, as I mentioned earlier, deal with it just the way you would deal with back pain or neck pain or shoulder pain. They can do pelvic pain physical therapy. And now, one of the big things, of course, is that there's so many women that are faced with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, this is a big problem in America and around the world, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the issue of estrogen and breast cancer right this moment, except in the context of so many women are afraid, and sometimes their doctors are afraid of estrogen, even vaginally, although there's more and more receptivity to it. But what do you tell women who might have breast cancer who are often the ones that have atrophic vaginitis? What do you tell them?
Well, I think we have to be quite honest and tell these people that whenever you use even small amounts of estrogen topically, it is absorbed. I mean, there's no question it's absorbed. On the other hand, you're using such small amounts of estrogen that you're not contributing to her estrogen therapy in the circulation to any significant degree. And the analogy I use is if you look at the total estrogen in these women in their blood, it might be, and I hesitate to use specific medical terms and numbers, but let's say if the normal woman at 70 or 65 might have 8 or 9 or 10 picograms of estrogen circulating. If you used a small amount of cream topically twice a week, it might go up 1 or 2 picograms, which again should be insignificant as far as any biologic effect on the breast. On the other hand, medical legally, I do think these people need to be aware, though, that we are giving a small amount of estrogen, and we don't really know whether this has any deleterious effect on potential breast cancer cells. So it's a little bit unknown, but we do know that if you do use it, you're contributing minute amounts. The other thing that I like to explain to patients is if you've had breast cancer years ago, because of the association of estrogen, they used to recommend taking the ovaries out in these women in order to get their blood levels of estrogen to a very low level.
Uh-huh.
We found out that taking ovaries out in these patients did not increase survival, so that small amounts of estrogen in the blood don't appear clinically to have any detrimental effect on the outcome of breast cancer. So adding a picogram or two to the serum level should really be inconsequential as far as the effect on breast cancer cells.
So basically what you're saying is the effect on the quality of life will be enormous, and the amount of risk will be extremely small.
I think that's well stated. And again, most patients, understanding that a small amount like this should not affect anything, is very good reassurance to them, particularly when we consider the quality of life and specifically the improvement in sexuality that they would benefit from with small amounts topically.
How long before they'll feel a difference? You know, for a woman who'll say, boy, I really feel better now. This has made a difference.
You know, it's probably within 6 to 8 weeks, but a lot of that depends on how diligent she is with applying and dilating the tissue. Initially, if you did this 3 or 4 times a week with a small amount of cream, you could see an effect within 4 to 6 weeks.
Uh-huh. So relatively soon. And if a woman starts this, does she have to stay on it? And what happens if she stops it?
Well, obviously, once you discontinue it, the atrophic process may re-ensue. But again, you don't have to do it forever, and it really depends on the patient. They can tell how much they need and how often they have to use it to get the benefit. So that a woman that perhaps does this for 6 or 8 weeks gets the elasticity back, and of course is then comfortable, she can maintain it with as small an amount as, you know, a fingertip, once or twice a week. And then if she begins to get symptomatic again, then she may need to increase it to twice a week or maybe more frequent, and then back off. So depending on her symptoms, she'll know just how much in her case she needs and how often she needs it if she'll do that with the physical therapy.
So this might be a good time to mention that there is a new medication that has recently been approved by the FDA. And it is called Osphena, O-S-P-H-E-N-A. And it's exciting because it is the first non-estrogen medication that has been specifically developed and approved for women with painful sex due to vaginal dryness. And particularly for women, if you have breast cancer and you just really don't want to take any risk of taking estrogen, even though estrogen works terrifically well, and even though small dosages probably aren't going to cause you any harm, there's still the potential risk. And the way this medication works, it's called a SERM, S-E-R-M, or a selective estrogen receptor modulator, and it works in some ways like the medication that you may have taken to treat breast cancer, and that medicine tamoxifen. That tamoxifen is also a SERM. So this is similar to that. But the difference is that it works on the vaginal tissues. And with further studies, we may find out it's helpful for bone health, and it may have other values as well, but too early to say that. But the initial studies are very promising, and at least know about it, and it's something you can talk about with your doctor if you're struggling with painful sex and estrogen is something that you're uncomfortable taking, or your doctor feels and you feel that it's something you just shouldn't take. And if that is the case, you can learn more about it at my series of webinars, one of which is on estrogen, non-estrogen, and alternatives to estrogen. And you can get there by going to bit.ly/how-to-optimize-menopause, and it'll take you right to it. That's bit.ly, bit.ly/how-to-optimize-menopause. So this is very important because what you're talking about is something that is a natural thing that occurs in a lot of women. And that is in the process of aging, sometime in the mid-50s or much earlier, potentially if a woman's had a hysterectomy, particularly if she's had her ovaries out, or if a woman is a big smoker, or if she has diabetes, which can have an effect on the blood vessels, or if she has high blood pressure, any of these kinds of vascular kinds of conditions, that this is something that causes the opening of the vagina to narrow, which leads to sexual pain, or discomfort at least. And that, of course, creates a negative spiral with not as much interest, and then that leads to worsening the problem, and that it's very reversible with a simple little bit of estrogen. And if it comes back again, that estrogen can be either restarted or she can continue on. And even women with breast cancer, they will have some increase of estrogen, a minute amount of increase in estrogen. But the perceived benefit here is excessive and the perceived risk is small.
And as I mentioned, of course, you can always talk to your doctor as well about the new medication Osphina, O-S-P-H-E-N-A, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator, and see if that's something that would serve you well as well.
Anything else you'd like to add? Because I think you really covered it extremely well. Anything else that you think would be important for people?
One of the things that again, and this gets back to my basic premise and interest in this whole thing, Mesh, is the relationship between couples is dramatically impacted in a positive way in couples that maintain their sexuality. Now, that doesn't have to be intercourse or coitally related, mm-hmm. but intimacy that they can enjoy shouldn't be age-related. And I think it really enhances the relationship when they are intimate, even if they can't have intercourse. The touching, the feeling, the intimacy, the whole thing is impacted in a dramatic way when we keep the genitalia healthy and functional. And I guess the analogy I would use in this case would be men and erectile dysfunction. Would there be any male who, as he aged, wouldn't love to delay or prevent that aging process with a small amount of cream once or twice a week? Do you think we could keep men from using that if it impacted or prevented their genital atrophy once they got to be 50 years of age?
I don't think so.
And I think, again, even though it may not be totally related to intercourse per se, the relationship of the couple is much better when they can maintain sexuality. And I think that's a big part of the health, happiness, hormone connection, and something that certainly shouldn't begin to really dissipate or decline once we reach middle age. I think it's something we can maintain.
You know, one thing you talked about that I was very impressed by is the fact that, you know, one of the things that the women don't like going to the gynecologist. I mean, why would they? And it can be, you know, it can be awkward, embarrassing, and so forth, but it doesn't have to be painful. But you talk about the fact that this narrowing can cause a routine exam to be a lot more uncomfortable and make it harder for the doctor also to be able to examine the woman in a very thoughtful and careful way because, you know, when a person is uncomfortable, they tighten up and so forth. And you have made the point that this could have a beneficial effect even if a woman's not sexually active. It still might be beneficial to try and not let this progress for just normal care reasons.
Well, medically, it's important to maintain the genital tract, and it's the medical term is patency, or it's opening. For instance, we've had patients, sadly, that have developed endometrial cancer, and with this atrophic process in the
That's cancer of the uterine lining.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes. It's uterine cancer. And these people, the hallmark of this is vaginal bleeding in a postmenopausal woman. Well, if the genital tract, particularly the cervix and the upper vagina and some of these things undergo the atrophy, we can no longer find this in these women. They don't have bleeding externally because the opening may really literally close up at the top of the vagina. The only way we know they have cancer is when they come in with the cancer having spread to other areas of the body. So, and the same thing is true with examining the ovaries. As most women know, ovarian cancer is a very silent disease, and the annual exam palpating the ovaries is a big part of the preventive health care. And in these women, if we can't do a pelvic exam because you can hardly gain access to the vagina, we're not going to find these ovarian cancers in time to prevent them. So it's not just sexuality, it's overall health. And that's just part of this. Nobody wants the genitalia and the genital tissues to shrink, particularly if a small amount of topical therapy prevents that. So it's not just sexuality. It's some general health concerns with allowing this atrophic process to become significantly advanced as we age.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very important thing. And we're talking about something that has a general benefit for aging and the aging process, but in general health, but also, of course, for many people, intimacy is an extremely important part of life. As you exactly shared just a moment ago, it's part of probably the ultimate expression of affection and intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's something that's entirely doable, and it's something that women should feel very strongly about if they don't hear it from their doctors to raise this question with the doctors. Do you see any narrowing down there? Is the tissue looking healthy? Do I need anything to help keep that tissue elastic and thicker and get the pH right so that my tissues remain healthy and sexuality, intimacy, and so forth remain a comfortable and loving experience as I continue to age? That's something they should feel strongly about bringing up, particularly as they hit around their 50s, but even younger, if they've had a hysterectomy or have diabetes, high blood pressure, big smokers, et cetera, these kinds of vascular issues.
One thing that's, I think, important too, Mace, is to remind women that the most common reason that a postmenopausal woman is no longer sexually active, the most common reason is the lack of an acceptable, available, conventional partner.
Mm-hmm.
As my practice has aged, and I've aged with these women, it's amazing how frequently you inquire about their sexual activity, and they will tell you, "Oh no, I'm not sexually active because my partner is no longer able to." The sad thing is, we're now seeing more and more men who use erectile dysfunction therapies, and they can maintain function. And we've finally gotten our urologists on board to the fact that before you prescribe these erectile dysfunction drugs, you need to make sure that the woman is properly estrogenized, because otherwise she's going to have discomfort, and this therapy is going to be ineffective. So once again, we need to recognize that this is something that's very easily prevented, very easily treated, and most women are absolutely delighted to have their healthcare provider broach this entire topic, because there really is a desire on their part to know about it and for the healthcare provider to understand it so easily treated.
Well, I really want to thank you. We've been talking today with Dr. Murray Friedman, who is a clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta. And I have heard him talk on this for years. I tell you, this man is really an expert in this area. He's helped thousands of women, and he has also, I hope, shared some information with you that will help you, encourage you to go and take care of this problem before it becomes one that really has an impact on your life, so that it's makes the quality of your life better. And one thing I want to ask in closing is that, is it ever too late? I mean, if a woman has begun to have narrowing of the vagina and so forth, will the tissue continue to respond as she ages?
Yes. There's no question but that the amount of atrophy that's occurred is more difficult to treat if it's been there longstanding. But it will still respond if you're patient and diligent. The topical therapy is extremely effective, even in those that have advanced atrophy. And I think it's something we need to think about. And I just appreciate your interest in this whole thing, Mace. Anybody that can help me become the vagina advocate is certainly somebody I appreciate. And just the fact that we've had this discussion is very enlightening, and I hope some people will glean something from this.
Well, I really want to thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us today. And I'm Dr. Mace Seibel, and I'd like to offer you a free copy of my newest ebook. It's called Changes During the Change. And if you want to come to terms with all the changes going on with you and make peace with them, this is an excellent book. It goes over the 5 most common changes that occurred, what to do about them, what to expect,
It's a very helpful tool. You can get it by going to freemenopauseebook.com. That's freemenopauseebook.com, and get your complimentary copy as an instant download. Now, I had promised you at the beginning of this discussion that I was going to offer you at the end of it some new things that had come out since I did my interview with Dr. Friedman. And so I want to tell you about several things that I think you'll find helpful. And these are not in any particular order, but all things that you should at least be aware of. One of them is very simple. It's particularly helpful for women who have breast cancer, worried about using any type of hormone. And that has to do with a simple approach for painful sex that is very effective. And it was first reported by a woman, Dr. Martha Goetsch, is G-O-E-T-S-C-H. And let me tell you about this because it is a very easy thing to do. What it involves doing is to talk with your healthcare provider about getting a 4% lidocaine prescription. And then what you do is you take that 4% lidocaine and you put it into a glass or some little vessel, and you put it in there, and then you put some cotton balls in, a couple, and just take one cotton ball out and apply it dripping wet to the lower part of the vagina for about 3 minutes right before you are going to have intercourse. And then you take the cotton ball away, and you can use a lubricant with it, and you just proceed with intimacy. And in this study that she did, the pain was reversible. I mean, it went away, although it doesn't last forever, but it allowed women to have pain-free sex by using this technique. It requires a prescription from the doctor, but you can do it at home, and it's very, very simple to do. So again, that's a 4% lidocaine that you put on a cotton ball, apply it dripping wet for 3 minutes, take it away, and then use a lubricant, and then proceed. Now, there's another new approach that's come out recently that is very interesting for women who have vaginal dryness and who have painful sex, and it is something called the Mona Lisa Touch. What it is a carbon dioxide laser, and it's used for painful or irritated vaginal tissues due to low estrogen, and it can also work for some types of itching of the vulvar skin and around the lips of the vagina. So what it involves is going into the doctor's office. It's in selected sites. It's not everywhere, but it's across the country. And they use a vaginal probe that has the same type of laser technology that's used for face and neck. But the difference is that it's adapted to the sexual tissues, and it works by making small little, if you will, holes in the tissue. These are microscopic. And what that does is that it allows new blood vessels to come into the tissue and then revitalize it. And that helps to combat the dryness, the painful sex, and some forms of irritation. And the procedure is done in the office. It takes only minutes to do. It's painless. And they recommend doing it 3 times over a 4 to 6 week window of time. And after a year, you may need to come in for a touch-up. Now, as yet, this is not covered by insurance, and each one of these procedures can cost $1,000 each. So it's something that you can check out and talk with your provider about it, and if it's something you want to do. It seems to be effective in the women that I've talked to. It's still new. It's not FDA-approved for a particular treatment of painful sex, but the instrument itself is FDA approved in the sense that they are allowed to use it. So it has been tested as safe. So Again, it's called the Mona Lisa Touch. Now, another thing that I think that you should know about is a medication. It's an oral pill. It's called Osphena, O-S-P-H-E-N-A. And it's called Osphena. The generic name is called Ospemifene, O-S-P-E-M-I-F-E-N-E. And it's called a SERM, or a selective estrogen receptor modulator. And you probably know of other SERMs because you may have heard of raloxifene or tamoxifen. It's the same class of medication. What that means is that selective estrogen receptor modulator means some tissues it activates and some tissues it inactivates. So the belief is here is that it causes the vaginal tissues to make moisture and to relieve the painful sex. And it seems to work pretty effective even for severe painful sex. But it does not have a positive effect on the breast. By that I mean it's not bad for the breast tissue. Now the side effects of it is that it can cause hot flashes in some women. Some women will get a mild vaginal discharge. And so these are common nuisances that do sometimes happen. But the good news is that it's quite effective. And now I've had a chance to see it with a number of women. They seem quite satisfied with it. It's an oral tablet. You take it once a day. So again, that's Ospemifene. Now, another thing that you need to know that is really important is that the best treatment, or one of the most effective treatments for painful sex and vaginal dryness, is the use of vaginal estrogen. Now, there has been a real worry in the past about using vaginal estrogen because women who have breast cancer may be at more risk of having recurrence or having the disease be negatively affected. Well, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists came out in March of 2016 with an opinion statement, and they reviewed all the papers that have to do with painful sex and vaginal estrogen and risks that come with it. And what they felt is, first, you should try other things. But if you try other things and you still aren't satisfied, vaginal estrogen is perceived to be a very reasonable option, even if you have breast cancer. And this is really important, even if you're currently under treatment for breast cancer or if you are in remission from breast cancer, they have found that there's been no increase of recurrence and there has been no adverse effects from using it in estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. So if you're in need of vaginal estrogen, this is one very important bit of information that you can take to your healthcare provider and talk about it. The last thing I want to talk about with you is a new medication. While it's not exactly for painful sex, it is a woman's type of libido enhancer, and it's called the little pink pill, and it is something called Addy, A-D-D-Y-I. And this medication has just been recently approved by a drug company, and it has just become available for use in improving the libido of women. Now, here's the thing about it. There's a little controversy about this medication because it seems to work, but it has some downside for it. So let's talk about the pros and the cons. The pros are that it increases the number of satisfying sexual experiences. That was the question asked, from 2.8 to 4.5 times per month compared with taking a placebo. So it does have an improvement on the number of satisfying sexual experiences. The second thing is that Addy is able to reduce distress due to sexual desire in all the trials done with it. And finally, the Female Sexual Function Index, or the FSFI test, which is a tool that measures sexual desire, increases statistically significantly in all studies. So it seems very beneficial. Now, here are the cons about it. Number one is that the medication has to be used daily and not just before sex, like Viagra. So you just can't take it when you need it. You have to be taking it daily. The second thing is that some people or some women experience dizziness, nausea, feeling tired, sleepiness, and trouble sleeping. So there are these side effects that can be a real nuisance. And for some women, this third thing is the problem, and that is drinking alcohol while on flibanserin, which is the generic name, can result in really low blood pressure, and that can produce symptoms after only two glasses of wine. So that happens in about 17% of women, so they can just really kind of get dizzy or pass out. And the last thing is the cost is about $800 a month, and it's often not covered by insurance. So we have a new pill called Addy, A-D-D-Y-I, available for women to improve libido. We now know that local estrogen can be used even in estrogen-dependent breast cancers. We have a pill called Ospemifene, which is a non-estrogen or a selective estrogen receptor modulator, which helps painful intercourse and vaginal dryness, even in severe cases. There is a laser treatment available called MonaLisa Touch, which can be helpful but not covered by insurance. Involves three treatments over 6 weeks and then one at a year. And then there's the 4% lidocaine gel, which can be used locally right before intercourse, using it just 3 minutes right before intercourse. So I wanted you to have the benefit of these new treatments and approaches and techniques, because these are all things you can talk about with your doctor to help you have a more enjoyable sexual experience and improve